call the regular board meeting to order. Mr. Solak, could you please lead us in the pledge?
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Mrs. Stecker, roll call, please.
Mr. Ellis?
Here.
Mr. Kendall? Mrs. Knox?
Here.
Mr. Smith?
Here.
Mrs. Howard?
Here.
Mr. Solak?
Here.
Mr. Don Rick?
Here. Okay, we've got our special meeting started here. We all have a working agenda, and I'll just turn it over to Ian.
And I want to, a couple moments, just give an opportunity for our observers, if they would like to introduce themselves, and give you an opportunity if you have any interest in making a comment.
My name is Paula McGowan. I live on Unincorporated Park Boulevard, across the street from Spalding Park. So I wanted to come in and meet everybody and see what the workshop's all about. And I'm an advocate for our neighborhood, and maybe for Mayville, DuPage County. And I just want to come over and observe. I'm open-minded.
Welcome.
Thank you. And I'm Ken, her husband. Take their company.
All right.
Thank you both for coming. And I'd like to note both for our tape and also for the record that Sam Black has joined us at the table this evening, and want to extend the congratulations to all of our board members who are here either new or as part of a re-election. So Steve, Erica, and Sam, congratulations on your recent victory, and welcome, Sam. Sam will be joining us in the discussion. I asked him to sit at the table with us since soon he will be an official member. And it'll be a nice transition for Bob and Sam. So, as you see, our agenda has several items, and the new items really are numbers 3, 4, 5, and 6. And those are the last items that we determined would be this agenda from the facilities meeting. First two items are really more of a review, as well as to provide you some information that I received from our attorneys as it relates to property acquisition. So just as a review, we concluded our last meeting talking about the decisions to look at Spalding as a test fit, the decision to continue to examine potential for large parcels of land other than Spalding to build a new school on, and to support any short-term acquisitions that we might make should they become available around schools, and that would become a part of the next steps of the long-range plan. There may be other things that we talked about that you may want to fill in the gaps on, but one of the things I want to clarify, in particular because the McGowans are here, is that the criteria that you looked at as it relates to looking at large parcels of land were not vast. You didn't have huge criteria, but we wanted it to be 8 acres or more. You wanted it to be relatively few parcels that would be purchased. In other words, it could be 3 parcels to make up 8 acres, but you didn't want it to be residential homes in a, you know, this 8-acre square that you were just purchasing those homes in that period of time, and that you wanted consideration to be given to whatever that property was contributing to the tax base for the district. Is that a fair summary of our criteria?
And that we were not going to eminent domain.
We did not discuss that.
Okay, I thought we did.
Eminent domain
of residences.
Of residences. Of personal property.
Yes.
Okay. Yes.
Okay.
Yes, thank you. We want to stay away from purchasing residential properties. So is that a fair summary of the bulk of our discussion at our last meeting, which is in March?
Yes.
When we concluded that meeting, you decided that you do want to move forward with land acquisition, and you wanted us to go out and look at what that might look like and bring back to you some thinking around that. And I have some thinking around that that I'd like to share. I spoke with our attorneys relative to land acquisition and if they could recommend either experts that they know or should we go with a realtor, a local realtor, should we go with some other kind of person. And they really said that you don't want to use a realtor. The reason that we don't want to use a realtor is that realtors deal in existing properties that are for sale and not for the searching of properties that may or may not be for sale. So it's the kind of the mining of land that where you want the expertise. And they recommended two people. Michael Marus, that we already worked with once before as one of those people, and another person, Alan Krakauer, as a second person. And what I have here from Alan to Aristalianis, our attorney, is kind of an outline of the first phase that would be required. I might not have sent enough that way. Can I have one more? I think I'm sure if I need two more, right?
No, I think you're good.
Okay. Did I not make enough, Cam?
Bob has one already? Yeah, Phyllis doesn't.
Okay, I'm sorry. Would one of you just quickly make some copies?
How many?
Just who's missing one? Sam, Dan, Sam and Dan?
And Julie.
Okay, two copies, three copies. What he looked at was the two phases, but really outlined what would be encompassing the first phase and a potential cost associated with that first phase. In describing to me what they would do is the first phase really is about exploring the area that we set out. And I did give them some few more limiting parameters. I said that we probably were not interested in looking at property that was south of the railroad tracks. Because south of the railroad tracks is not an area, you know, that we would want to serve. Because we already have schools there, and you get to Roosevelt Road pretty quickly. So looking at land there, which is, if not 100% residential, is nearly so all residential. I said focus your search just from Roosevelt Road north, and then all of the, you know, the areas.
From Chicago, or the...
I'm sorry, from the train tracks north, sorry. Tara, question? I mean, that was just a general statement, so it doesn't certainly have to...
No, I'm just wondering why we would use the railroad tracks as a limiting factor. I mean, I understand what you're saying, but even to exclude it from a cursory, I mean, he could probably open a map and make that...
And we can include it. The original question that the attorney said to me, is there any way that you can limit the search so that, one, cost is less, and are there things that you wouldn't do, like areas you wouldn't look at, et cetera, et cetera.
Okay.
So I think Steve and I talked briefly, and I think I had maybe three limiting criteria. But the only thing that I really gave them were the criteria we set here. Okay. So we can always, once we decide what we're going to do, that can all change. So this is the process that they would utilize at a first phase, which is really just getting the lay of the land and finding, they would be under contract to kind of identify as many possible possibilities as there are. And then we would narrow that field probably down to one or two, probably two, that we want further exploration, because that exploration then is going to cost more money to do the kind of deeper phase two work, which would involve, you know, what's the what issues may surround that? Are there any geographical issues? Are there any land issues? Are there any water issues? Are there any, you know, toxicity issues? I mean, all of that stuff. Oh, I know, the other area I told them was to stay away from ComEd. Yeah. Area we're not interested in.
Mm-hmm. When land's under 5 hours, potential power lines.
So this is the preliminary information. It would appear that both Marus and Krakauer have said that the cost of phase one of the study would not exceed $5,000. I see it as probably something that would cost us about $5,000.
What did we use the previous people for?
To do a land evaluation.
No, to get a...
An appraisal.
An appraisal.
Where is Morales located?
Kind of Park Ridge.
Yeah.
Park Ridge. I think he's the mayor of Park Ridge.
Oh, he's Park Ridge.
Or something like that, yeah.
I know Ernie Morales.
Maybe it's a different...
You know what?
I know an Ernie Morales.
Oh.
Who's an industrial appraisal.
It could be related. These are the two biggest names in this work. The other thing is that Franzik recommended that we may want to consider employing both, one for phase one and one for phase two.
And the advantage with that, to that?
The advantage to that would be that should we go to a property that we're having difficulties making a deal, and legal pieces become involved, that we would already be employing the two top people in this field.
Oh, I see. So you're corner of the market on expertise.
Like.
Which would indicate our seriousness.
Got it.
Do we have an idea of what the cost is for phase two?
We don't.
Okay. And it was significantly more than...
Well, it would... But, you know, phase two is probably a menu. So it'd probably be very difficult for them to say, here's what phase two is going to cost, because you don't know what kind of studies you'd have to do at that point on the properties you've identified. So certainly, when we talked once before about this process, I can't remember exactly what we talked about in terms of the dollars it may cost ultimately, but you would have to do further studies, whether it's soil borings, water level, toxicity, you know, any number of things. It would really depend on the location, what kinds of studies you'd have to do based on the information that's available.
If we're talking purely environmental, which is a phase one and a phase two, phase one would probably be $2,000, and a phase two, and then these are different phases. Mm-hmm. And a phase two is basically borings, and mm-hmm. depending on how many borings we do, usually you do four, somewhere like four or five. And it would probably be about the same, maybe $2,500.
So maybe you have to do four or five tests. Maybe it's another right. $10,000 or something like that. I don't, you know, I mean, if you'd like, I can pursue that. I don't know if they'd be able to nail that down, but...
No, I just kind of a back of the envelope number, all things being equal.
Sure. And I do think, you know, one of the things is, of course, when we start to go down this path, is do we have limiting parameters that you want to set in terms of the cost of the studies and how far we go and how much that budget is? I mean, that sort of thing is something. I'm not sure we'd be ready to talk about that till we have a better sense of what may even be out there and available. To us.
I think it's premature to put a number on it because we, as you said, we don't know what's available.
So the relevant question to me is, right now, do you wish us to move forward, and is this an acceptable direction to move forward in versus trying to find someone, excuse me, who's a commercial vendor around this area?
You have to go with the experts in the field. I mean, if this is...
Yeah.
I mean, I will admit that at first glance, I think, you know, given where their offices are located, maybe they don't know enough about our area. However, I mean, this is their area of expertise. I mean, I'm sure they're somewhat...
This is what they do.
This is what they do.
Well, I think we've seen one report from Morales. I mean, I wouldn't mind seeing, using... planners, and was it Krakow Associates, just to see.
And Franzik would recommend Krakow for phase one,
yeah.
And Maroos for phase two.
Mm-hmm.
In terms of, you know, looking at their expertise and what they bring to the table.
Yeah, if we can get a more formal, I guess we need to define a little more.
Sure, we don't have an actual proposal.
Yeah.
And that's, I didn't really think it was timely to ask them to give us a proposal until I had some feedback from you, since I hadn't talked with you yet about this direction. So we'll look for a proposal for them?
Yeah, I think it's okay. Interesting.
I mean, I think you'll see pretty much this line spelled out. It would also say that it perhaps is time for Bob and I to make an appointment with the village and have a conversation with them about our intentions and see if they have any insights into land, let them know what we're thinking, seek their advice in whatever way that, you know, they may have.
Mm-hmm. Out of our map, though, I know obviously the vast majority of it is under Glen Ellen's planning authority, but the other areas are going to be under everybody else.
That's correct. Mm-hmm. So if it's in Glendale Heights, it would be, or Wheaton, or...
Mm-hmm. So do you want to, but do you just want to contact Glen Ellen?
Well, I think from the standpoint of who will have the most likelihood of knowing we're doing this and is Glen Ellen. I think as we see some of the sites, or as we get advice from them mm-hmm. in terms of their plan, because they will be meeting with the villages too. If they say, you know, you probably want to do that first, then we would make appointments with all of the villages.
And do they do that with the Park District and 87 too?
Do they?
You said they would make some contact.
Well, they'll look at. They'll make contact with the village first because of zoning restrictions, you know, all of those parameters. And so they will be making contact, I'm sure, with all of the various villages. But Park District would probably, other entities like that would be, do you have land? You know, the inquiry. Mm-hmm. Any land you want to get rid of? But from the standpoint of regulations, probably not as necessary.
I don't know if the Park District is ever interested in selling land. They want
right.
to continue to acquire.
Right.
I just think it's good form to, at this point, go to our, you know, municipal partners and let them know what's going on.
That's what they're both looking for. You, administration.
And we might do, but I think we could meet with Stacy, who is the village planner,
right.
and give her that, you know, she'll okay. sit down with her. She's probably the person we would get sent to first anyway, but we would include Terry in our contact as well. Okay, well then we will move forward with that and bring back that proposal probably to a finance meeting in the near future. Okay, I'm gonna turn to Bob and to Drew as our finance liaisons because I want to make sure you're moving this along at the pace and in the depth that you wish. Since this is a recommendation from the finance committee that's come back to the whole board, but the next item on the agenda is the item that we haven't had a chance to talk about yet, and that is the renewal of the demographic study. And you do have in your packet this evening the last demographic study from CASARTA. And so it's there for your review, but I was hoping that perhaps I could draw your attention to just a couple items. It should be, Sam, just a plain stapled packet.
I had two.
You had two. I know. If Mike were here, he'd be very unhappy. I could have brought you all a flash drive. Maybe, and one of our goals, of course, for next year is that we'll all have laptops, and we won't be doing any paper, and we'll just be accessing our files.
I like paper.
I know.
We can still print it out if you want.
So what I thought might be helpful to you, because my recommendation would be that we stay with CASARTA for the renewal of the study. One, because he did our last study. Two, because I think he did a really good job. But I'd like to draw your attention to page 44 of the document. And now I don't know if there's an...
Okay.
Is there another extra one sitting
yeah.
around here?
Okay.
I would like them.
We have a few copies because she gets hers from every time she received it.
Do you have an extra copy?
No.
Sometimes.
Oh, why?
I was just going to let the McGowans take a look at what you're talking about there.
I can share about it.
Okay. What I wanted to draw your attention to in the packet, would someone note, Erica, would you please note? Time.
Very much. No chocolate over there.
If you'll turn to page 44 of the document from CASARTA, it begins the projections. It shows, you know, the A series, the B series, the C series. And basically, we land between the A or the B based on his projections. So on page 44, you can see Churchill's projections for 2010-11 in the A series were 566. And we currently have 679 students at Churchill. Now, that includes pre-K.
Right.
And he only has 16 pre-K, so you'd have to, you know, you have to deduct.
There's a K-5 number.
Pardon me?
There's a 550 for the K-5 number.
Right. Yeah. You could just deduct on what.
Well, we have 80.
Right. Yeah. And we have 73 pre-K.
We need two classrooms of pre-K.
But we're still over 600 there without.
Correct. Well,
what's the pre-K number?
The pre-K is 73.
But pre-K is step function. If you got a room, you're going to put 40 kids in it. If you got two rooms, you want to put 8.
I know, but it's, we're still.
But you're at 606, and he projected 560 or 550.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Is that right?
Yes, that's correct. That's in the A series, and in the B series, you'll see it's a little bit. It's close as well. He predicted 639, and we're at 606. And you have to add 16 to that, I guess, because...
Well, no,
you know,
it would be 619.
Oh, right, 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 right. So, we're somewhere between the A and the B on his projections for Churchill. If you skip C, because that's the high end, and none of us, thank goodness, we didn't have that growth. Then if you go to Forest Glen, in the... they have EC at 15. We currently have 54 students there in pre-K. So if you look at that, if you take the 54 away from there, we're a little bit low even on the A series. And in truth, Forest Glen has been the school where we've seen the greatest declines in our enrollment.
What's the number?
545 minus 54 is 489, yeah. No, 480, no. I've got an enrollment report here. I mean, if we want to take a look at them, if everybody wants an enrollment report. Okay.
So you said how?
489 is what you said.
That's what I said, but I just did it quickly.
No, 54.
I'm trusting you.
It's 81. 41, I think. 41.
So we have 41, and the projection was
511.
Well, no, it was 497.
We're looking at it, Ian. We're looking at the K-5 number.
Oh, right. Okay, you're looking at the K-5 number. Sorry.
I'm looking at 2010-11,
right.
Not
910.
Yeah, I think K-5 is really
the best number.
Where he's drawing from, yeah.
So I'm going to guess that the B is lower, that we're lower from the B.
We are below the B. That's correct.
I don't see any patterns.
We are right on the target if you don't take the pre-K out of there. Pre-K and EC. Because remember, we have a blended program at both Churchill and at Forest Glen. So Forest Glen D series is a little high, and C, of course, way over the top. At Franklin, they projected 26 pre-K. We have no pre-K there, and so their K-5 was 551. We are currently at 591. We do have a special education class there, but it's total enrollment in our two MIP classes, I think, is like 16.
So what's our current K through 5?
591.
So we're over.
Mm-hmm.
Minus 16 or
no?
No.
Okay.
No. And then, so we're closer on our B series at Franklin, which was 605. And then Lincoln, Our K5 was projected at 619, and we're at 612. So we're right there at the A series with that as well. B series was way higher.
And we have
no pre-K there.
Nothing there.
And then Hadley, the A series projected 1,115. We have 1,199. And in the B series, it was 1,196. So we have three of our schools that fall right on target with the B series of projections, and two of our schools that fall in line with the A series. So in overall, we're probably somewhere between A and B. That's on page 59. You'll see that the A series projection for the system was 3,423, but the B series is 3,714. So we're higher, significantly higher than the A series, but just falling a little bit below the B series. And if we just stayed with the A series, if you look out to 2016-17, obviously a very long projection and difficult to do, we start having a loss of some enrollment, but not significant. 20 students overall in a district of 3,000. So,
when looking at this and the census results that we got, how does this compare with the census results that we were going to? I mean, were you able to pull that stuff apart?
No, we've not done that kind of analysis. Okay. And we would expect him to do that.
You know, I just wondered if in looking, you know, first glance at the data, the trending looked like...
We haven't taken that time to do that.
Before this study, when was the last time we had it?
There was one done in 2005. Mm-hmm. We did a quick refresh, I think.
Yeah, there was a refresh.
So in like 2006.
That was a different demographer, though.
It was different.
No, that was still NI. Okay. It was NIU.
No,
2005.
No.
There was
two NIUs.
There was
two NIUs. Yeah. And then we moved to Casarda. Right.
But even before then, there was Oilers or whatever.
Ellers. Ellers did the previous ones.
I believe that was what the Boomer did.
Yeah, like in 2002. So, I think John Casarda does a nice job. I know you, we certainly can look at other, we can look at Ellers. I think our experience with NIU was not positive, and so I'm not sure I would want to go back there.
I would just want to know how, current 2010 census data online, how that's used now to map to our actual district boundaries. Problem I had, even though his numbers were there, but to say, okay, I'm going to go pull the Carroll Stream town data and the Glendale Heights town data and the Lombard, like they were all, equal in how they feed into District 41 in terms of the types of homes and the areas doesn't make sense, because the portion of Carroll Stream that's in District 41 is really just new townhomes, for the most part. It's not all of Carroll Stream what their, birth rate looks like. I don't see how that's relevant to the part of Carroll Stream that's in District 41 or the part of Lombard that's in District 41. Or unincorporated DuPage County. So I'm curious, with the geocoding and everything that's available in the last census, does he have new tools at his disposal that really map to our boundaries? Because I don't know if he deals with school districts all over the country that are a little more, this whole town, where there's an overlap between village, city data, or a whole county, whereas, to say, look, our district doesn't line up nicely with other government entities.
Thursday letter, didn't have some information and it was by township within DuPage County.
Well, that was the information that I shared with you that came out of NIU in a federal study that was shared with the county on the last 10 years. And it was, we could map it to our individual, but the work that was done from NIU on that was not very useful information to us, because you couldn't, the band was so wide. that it said, well, you're changing, your demographics changed by either 0 to 20%. Okay, was it 2%? Or was it 18%? You know, a big difference in that. But I thought it was insightful, if nothing else, to look at it from the township perspective in terms of how DuPage in general has changed over the last 10 years in terms of its demographics.
I wonder if it would be helpful for us to know also with the apartments that are along Bloomingdale Road, what's the vacancy rate, is that stayed stable over the last, certainly since this 4 years ago? What might we expect, what couldn't extrapolate just from turnover, vacancy, what it might
Well, that's what I always question. Okay, are if somebody's in an apartment now, let's say they haven't started their family, does the economy where they said, well, we start to have children by the time they're in kindergarten, they buy a single-family home way out west. But they don't do that now. So they stay in the apartment longer, and we've got kids in kindergarten. You know, that type of analysis to that, where there's economic conditions, too. Are we seeing, maybe patterns that we didn't see the previous 10 or 20 years?
Absolutely.
I'm just curious if he has more information now, because I remember some of the New York Times a couple of months ago. It was almost like a Google's Maps. Where you could, just keep going down closer to a little area, and all the information was online now. Where, he may have more information than he did in 2007 now with the latest census.
Well, I certainly can ask him when we make contact with him if that's the direction that the board would support us going, is to stay with Casarda and, build a new study. I think there are probably multiple new factors that will be figured in. Has our birth rate in general dropped since the economic downturn?
Birth rate at CDH really relevant to our district alone, or do you need to look at all the hospitals in the county?
Well, if I remember, it wasn't the major break point in his A, B, and C series, basically the interest rate.
Right.
That was it was all about if the economy tanks, this will happen.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where we wound up, was
mm-hmm.
on the low end.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know, Steve, if what you're asking, looking at just portions of Carroll Stream, does it really make it, is the sensitivity of his projections really based only on the economy?
Right.
And does it really matter what the specific birth rates are in those slivers of those communities?
Or just in general, the types of buyers for those, that type of building. Do they tend to have school-age children or not? It's more statistical analysis. How many we have, 50 townhome units of this cost for this county. Statistically, how many school-age children do you generally have out of that?
I mean, have we, can we even see the changes? You said we've seen changes, out of the bus route scheduling, even out of some of those areas where maybe we didn't used to see kids coming out of, certain types of homes, and now we are.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, is that real? Or does that help him?
I don't know, and that would be a question for him. What are the data points you are going to use,
mm-hmm.
and ask him to include those in his proposal to us so you have a chance to review them.
In the first time around, what kind of data did we provide to him other than here's our district boundaries, and that was it?
We gave him quite a bit.
We gave him 10 years of fall housing numbers. We gave him a listing of all new developments that were in the pipeline that we knew about from all the villages and all the, even DuPage County, the unincorporated areas. That was about it. And then him and his staff are the ones that lean the birth rates. And I believe what he does for the birth rates, it's not just one hospital.
Right.
It's anybody who's got the Glen Ellen address or Glen Ellen Heights address.
Mm-hmm.
That's how they determine the births are registered that way. But we did give him 10 years of historical information of the enrollment and then also the new development, listing of all the new developments and what kind of housing it was and how many housing units they were planning on doing, inclusive of they were the number of bedrooms that they were on the books for planning.
Okay. So are you asking us to go out again? Is that what you're asking?
I'm asking that we seek a proposal from him.
And then what do we do with that information relative to this discussion?
Well, if we see that, in fact, it validates the current projections, you know, takes them out another 5-10 years, then if we trust those projections, we would say, yes, we continue to need an additional school. If the projections were to come back and say, based on this economic downturn, based on what we've seen nationally in a birth rate, we can anticipate your enrollment is going to drop by X number of students over the course of the next 10 years, well, that changes the conversation a little bit for us. So I think that having that study will provide us an updated lens to the demographics and to the projections that he can make.
I think in finance, too, when I was sitting in a meeting, you guys talked about the need to provide more current data for community as well, which I agree with. I think that's going to be a very simple question for people to ask, to say these numbers are 4 years old and you're looking as a board to make decisions 10 and 15 and 20 years out, which is our charge, right? So just from a answering the question perspective, I think it's not necessary. And to answer your original question, Ann, I do think that we should stay with CASARTA for continuity's sake, and then to Steve's point, finding out what kind of new tools he may have.
In 07, when the study was done, what was the relative cost?
$6,500?
I think it
was under $10,000. I don't know if it's in here. I thought it was in.
So let me ask this question.
Oh, I have the invoice here. It was $6,900.
So going back to this, under the B, out to 2017.
Do you want to draw attention to a certain page, John?
I would like to draw.
But John, this was done in 2007, before any economic, downturn.
Right.
I mean, do you really trust this done in 2007, out to 2007?
Well, it was done in 2007, and it's 2011, and we're close. I mean, we're not out, we're not way below or way above.
Okay, let's hear what you think.
What page are you looking at?
I'd like to draw everyone's attention to page 60.
Thank you.
So under the B series, we got 3,700 kids, which is the middle of the road. And under the A series, we got 3,400 kids, and we're in between that.
Mm-hmm.
And he's saying that's where we'd be in 16 and 17. So I'm sitting here going, where we are in the planning process, is it worth spending whatever $6,000 to update these numbers? I don't see what that would do for us, given that we're already projecting we're somewhere in between.
I mean, my opinion is you're not going to see any surprises, right? There's not going to be a big bump up. I don't think any bump down you see is going to decline your way out of a new school.
Well,
but I think you gotta check. The first question that's going to be asked is about what your projections for enrollment.
Well, we're at 3,600 now. So was A low?
Most conservative,
right?
Yeah, A was low.
Which is 3,400 out to 16-17 on page 59. So it's 200 students less than we have now, and I think one of the big differences between this study and where we are is the pre-K numbers, I guess. I'm guessing. I didn't do the math.
Yeah, but pre-K is,
Yeah, 41 versus the...
Well, I'm just saying there's a number of students that we can support, and different districts may have a different range of where they put children. If you're going to have a classroom, you might as well put 40 children in it.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I guess I would ask John D. Casarda, PhD, if he feels studies he did back in 2007 that he's refreshed have significantly changed, or if it's plus or minus 50 to 100 kids, I don't know that changes any thinking. Now, if your point is, once we decide on what the plan is, we need to do this so that the community understands the latest research. I get that, but for now, is that really going to drive our decision? I mean, you know, again, I'm asking you guys that question because
I really could see it as that if something says you're going to really decline, that would be the only thing.
Right, and I'm just wondering, I mean, he's been a consultant for us, he does this, it might merit a conversation, say $5,000 now, we might spend it later if we feel it's necessary to say, you know, what have you seen if you've updated this, and he may decide to share it with you, or he may decide, well, that's, you got to take it.
Well, and you make a good point in terms of the timing of the study. We put this on the agenda because it was one of the concluding comments from the Finance Committee that we need to talk about a refresh of the demographic study. So the question might be, more importantly, when do you do this? Do you do it when you're getting closer to feeling like you've finalized some of your plans and the long-range plan is built? And then find out, you know, what the projections are, which could be a year away from now.
I mean, the logic says, at least in my opinion, says do it now so that when you say, okay, we need a school of X students, that you get the X correct.
Mm-hmm.
And so that your dollar number that you're coming up with at referendum time is right.
It's supported.
You know, I don't think you'd wait until right before and just say, oh, by the way, here's a... Here's a demographic projection. We already know that we need another building based on our current enrollment.
Well, that's what I'm saying. I don't know that it...
But, right,
but that's a very different question to put to the community to have them respond to versus, but are you sure? You know, prove to us, which is a valid question, that 10 years down the road, because you know, I know that what we'll also hear, which came up the last time, was a 20-year ago, 25-year ago, even 28-year ago decision to take a school down, to sell a school, you know, why didn't you just hold on to it? So we're still addressing those issues, and I think, you know, I'm erring on Bob's side of this to get ahead of this, so this is a part of the process and not providing statistics to shore up our argument.
Well, what if Sarna was right and we're looking at 3,400? I mean, that's only, what, 200 less? That's 10. I mean, you still need something. So
well,
I guess,
we have
you know,
a whole school,
I'm trying.
Yeah.
Well, then,
and it would be nice to have schools that aren't packed to the gills right away when they're open.
Yeah. Right.
But I think it's part of, I mean, Lombard just did a new demographic study, and they do one every 4 or 5 years. We're doing a long-range plan renewal here, another thing. It's just another piece of information that you have as you're planning
ahead. Part of doing this.
I would make a demographic study every 5 years, which would
just make sense.
Be a matter of course. Mm-hmm.
Is that written into the law we're supposed to have a demographic study?
No, not at all.
I just think it makes sense as a planning tool. Plus, now you've just got new census data.
Mm-hmm.
So any census data he relies on a year from now is going
to
be the same.
Right.
Census
right. Hopefully he's got some new tools to use with it. It's all been put electronic out in the public domain, and he can do things with it. Yeah. One question I would pose to him, though, is I would give him also the last 10 years of enrollments of the districts around us and say, why are we different, for the most part, than Wheaton, 89, Lombard? You know, Marquardt's the only one that's really been staying kind of steady like we are. Because Wheaton's gone down a bit. Obviously, 89's declined. Lombard's declined. What, you know, what's different about our district that we're trying to state study?
That would be a good question to ask him. I don't know if, given the kind of information that he'll be working with, it may be that there are softer factors. That
maybe, I don't know.
The answer to that. But,
well, and I'm,
but his study, it was this one or the last one, said Carroll Stream, the city of Carroll Stream was going to see an increase in population. But their school district saw a steep decline.
Just one school, one of five school districts.
Right. But.
I mean, I don't know what the other school districts in Carroll Stream have been doing.
93? District 93?
No. 93 is one of five school districts in Carroll Stream. So we would be one. We increased. U46 is one. What happened there? And then I don't know what the other two are that are in there. But,
I mean,
so they have five elementary districts.
Yeah, okay.
So it could be that they're growing in different places. Mm-hmm. Sort of like we are in terms of the south side of Glen Ellen is declining.
Let me just say, it's a question we always get from constituents. How can you, everyone else around you is declining?
It's that piece of property right here on Five Corners that has been abandoned for 15 years.
Well, I think it's a great question to ask him to see whether or not he can somehow statistically give an answer to that.
Give us a reason that we're getting something, some new information, you know, something in your stock update, because we feel, like you said, it'll probably come in again, up or down.
There'll be a plus 10% or minus 10% projection.
And as part of this, too, I mean, and I'm kind of paging through it, seeing some generalities, but I'm wondering, with the new census data, can we also have a demographic study within the demographic study of what our changing population?
And he does look at our ELL population and our special needs population. So he looks at them as it relates programmatically. You'll see changes in that.
And that's a big, I mean, I think that's a factor that the community needs to recognize. I think that's an amazing piece of information. Mm-hmm. Well, it's not missing to us in that we talk about it, but I don't think people are hearing that.
Yeah. It's also facility.
It does drive the facility.
It impacts our facilities.
Yes, absolutely.
Well, and I think, and you know, to kind of tag on to that a little bit, that's not the only thing that's impacting our conversation about facilities and what we need in order to meet the needs of students. As we talk about 21st century facilities, they look a little different than the classrooms we currently have. Actually, look a lot different than the classrooms we currently have. And so how you use the space you have and how many students they house is different and will be different over time. So even if you were planning for a school district, I think as John said, a 4,000 or Drew, that we still need a facility because we're still underserving students. So, first question, we're comfortable with CASARDA?
Yes.
Second question, we'd be comfortable at least getting a proposal from him. Obviously, further discussion would have to take place as to whether we want to move forward with a proposal.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Yeah, inclusive. So are we all comfortable with inclusive of Tara's point about demographics within demographics?
Which I think you'll see in the report to some extent, but we do have new data around DuPage as well. You know, the other interesting thing in DuPage, even if you look at that information I gave you, and even though it's township data, we make up a good chunk of Milton Township, and it's the one township that's remained relatively stable with some significant growth. Oh, you know, in certain populations and some diminishing growth in other populations, but the overall stability of the area is a little better than the rest of DuPage. So it's kind of interesting. I mean, we are a little bit of an enclave. And, well, why that is, it's because it's such a great place to live, I think.
Right.
I mean,
from a process standpoint, is that coming back to the full board? Is that going back? Okay.
I think we'd bring it back to the full board. It's not going to exceed the threshold, most likely, of needing a finance discussion, whether or not this is, you know, I think it really is the conversation around do we want to pursue the demographic study at this time. Probably doesn't even require formal board approval, but, you know, we would bring it and it would make it such. Okay, any other comments on that? The next two items are in a way connected. The discussion of the master facility plan document, actually an action plan, what we're going to do, when we're going to do it, fleshing that out a little bit more, and then discussion of a communication strategy of when to engage the community are connected in a certain way because our plan will obviously include an engagement plan. But as we're building our action plan for the long-range plan, we have so many long, you know,
long-range capital plan. But the master facility plan is an integral part of the long-range plan. And so as we build the action plan, we're looking at the next 5 years of what we're going to do relative to our facilities. Some of that work is work we can just do. Some of it is a part of our our long-range capital plan, fixing roofs, parking lots, you know, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. But some of it might be work that either gets at deeper site committee recommendations. A topic that's down here is listed as number 6, and I want to talk a little bit more about before the evening concludes, 21st century classrooms. You know, how much of that work, we would see that work as moving forward regardless of a building plan. Mm-hmm. Now, we wouldn't invest a lot of money in areas of a building we think might be demolished or might have huge renovations to it. I mean, that would be part of it. But part of my question to you is, how do you see this proceeding relative to action plans and timelines? And, you know, we can take our direction from you and start to flesh that out, but I think we need a little bit of a conversation about what are we seeing as the future. We know, and if I could be blunt, I'm just going to say this. I don't see us going out for a referendum for a facility for at least 2 years. A third year, maybe, which would be 2013-14. That, in my mind, would be sort of the earliest the district would go out. I know, Bob. It's hard to hear. But if you think about the work that has to be done, you think about the economy's recovery, you think about the concept of a 21st century school. These are big. We're talking about big paradigm shifts. And so that's just my opinion. Now, you can have, you know, I do what you tell me to do. So you may have a different opinion on that. But as I think about the work of change that we continue to do in the district and the really critical educational work that needs to change around 21st century learning in the next couple of years, I'm not sure we know yet what the facilities really need to be in order to meet the needs of the future. So that's just my thinking. But what is your thinking on that?
Seems like a long time.
After you speak Bob and I out before.
You're talking about a referendum in 13-14, which means you're not opening a door until 15-16?
Correct.
It's a long time. Mm-hmm.
Definitely no need to do this study.
Well, it takes time.
Not that much.
Well, let me put this in the mix. Well, let me just hear what you have to say.
Yeah. I was going to offer something else up. Because a referendum, I think we went through this many iterations. I don't know that a referendum has to be for money. It can be a question to the public, mm-hmm. which could either mm-hmm. accelerate the timeline or give us some feedback on the other referendum, 79 to 21. We could ask a question.
Could an advisory referendum?
Like, would you support a building campaign?
We could ask the public something so we can get an idea of what they're thinking. Now, I know some people will say, well, until you lay out the details, you know, and then we go through all that hassle, but...
So if you get 14% voter turnout again, what does that tell you?
Tells us that not too many people cared. I mean, you know... Again, it's not an ideal situation, but if that's what you're thinking, and I don't know that I disagree with your timeline in terms of, I don't think we certainly would go for a referendum in November. I don't see how, you know, if this is as big as you say it is and, you know, you've thought through it. I think a question, the fact that because you're saying that, we would basically invest the next 5 years based on your timeline as a board, as administration,
to try to do something like this. And that's a lot of time to invest without either A, taking a leadership position on the board and saying we're doing it full steam ahead, or B, asking the public a question. And I don't know, you know, I haven't thought through what the question is, but something to get a level of guidance from them.
Which is part of the community engagement process. You know, what are the strategies to get the questions out there and get some feedback from people?
I hear what you're saying, and I understand the length of time in terms of the steps that we have to take and the due diligence to get through land. What do we? I mean, and I can appreciate that. On the flip side, it makes me sick to think we're going to sit here. I don't want to say waste time because it's not a waste, but allow, you know, this facilities question in my mind has encompassed of the 6 years I've been on the board. At least five and a half of it has been dealing with facilities, and I recognize it's an ongoing issue, but it's like a waiting game, and it's that, you know, when I think about it, you know, personally having a third, you know, since my kids were, you know, were kindergarten and first grade, that this is the discussion that we've had, and by the time they will be through, not one of them, including my current third grader, will walk through the door of this building. And I think it's, once again, it's people with children of our age who are dealing with this issue, yet our children are not the ones who are going to use this facility. If potentially, you know, whatever it is, K-5, middle school, whatever it is. And I feel like, once again, it's, we're not getting to the people who are going to be using it, who are really going to be the ones who need to put this on their backs and help push it through. I got the diligence. I understand, you know, you got to do the demographic. It's also good business to do that. But, you know, and then I think about, you know, we're going to get to the discussion of this 21st century classroom. And at LLT the other day, you know, there was a little sidebar discussion about, you know, can we get some of this furniture? Can we start making some of our rooms look this way? And, you know, and I think, again, you know, it's like these little pockets. Like, you know, we want to be 21st century learners, but we're going to be a quarter of the way through the 21st century before anything changes. And it's disappointing. It's frustrating. I get it, but I don't feel like it.
And remember, I just put my opinion out there. But Tara, let me just identify with you just a bit. I'll be gone.
Well,
I will have spent my entire career here. I mean, not my entire career. The part of my career that I spent here has been in a non-stop conversation about facilities.
Right.
You'll have to invite me back to somehow participate as a volunteer.
Well, I mean, and you and I, you know, we've kind of had that discussion a little bit about, you know, what's still going to be going on. And I think that's, you know, it's reigniting the passion on this issue with a new group of parents. And I think that's, you know, that's sort of it. When I talk to people, you know, and I just use, you know, Andrea Bear as an example. You know, her last child's in eighth grade. She has almost, her entire career of having children through our district has been tackling this issue. I mean, people on the Blue Ribbon Committee. I mean, and that's what it is, yet we will still get people with children, with younger children, commenting, can't we use the Main Street school system, Main Street, to house children who don't have a school classroom there? And you're like, hey, you know, you're kidding, right? Because it's re-educating or educating a group of community members to get on board that this is where we are.
Oh.
And maybe that's the community, you know, that's the community engagement piece of it, but...
Well, if we think for a moment about the engagement piece as being also an education piece, and that's one of the reasons I raised this question about how do we proceed in our action planning around this topic, because, you know, our two-year plan is going to come out, and it will have to be a very aggressive plan around facilities for both the education and some substantive vision. You know, what does it look like? And so when we talk about a 21st century classroom, I do think that having
some visible models in our schools to look at, where not only is instruction different, but the way we've designed within the parameters we have what a school looks like. Because no matter what, Tara, most of our students, unless we build a junior high, are not going to go to a new school. They're going to go to a school that looks different from what we have. And there isn't anything to keep us from starting that change now.
Well, and I think that's, for me, I think that's, it's going again, are we having these parallel discussions? We're working on this track for a long-term, you know, solution,
right,
issue, you know, what we're going to do with our kids. I know I've said it a number of times, and I'll say it again, I do not believe that this community will support a small number of children with a brand new 21st century building while the other kids are in red brick schools with rows of desks. I do not believe this community will support it. So that said, we do need to, you know, have our buildings start to change while this is happening, or give these opportunities for other children to have that experience.
And what we'll see as our buildings, as classrooms begin to change physically and instruction changes, I'm guessing, based on our engagement, our education, and our outcome, our what we produce, that they will see that we can't, even our schools we have now have to change. Mm-hmm. We need more space here, we need less space here, we need, you know, that sort of thing. And that will help become a driver, not for whether it's a one school that gets to be a new school, but that all of our schools have to have interior changes in order to accommodate what, you know, what we envision educationally as a new school.
And I think that in this community we can say things a lot about, you know, how something's going to look or how it's going to be implemented, but until children and families are actually doing it, they don't get, they have a hard time, I mean, you know, the visual learner, but I think that that's a really good way to do it. I don't know, you know, thinking 20 steps ahead, but, you know, do you put a 21st century classroom in every one of our elementary, you know, in every one of our schools, and so parents can start walking through? I mean, that to me is how you get them to start to see this is what we believe, this is best practice, this is what we want, and people think, that's what I want for my child, how do I get that for my child?
Well, that's what we are hoping to achieve next year, is to have two classrooms in every building that have new furniture design. They won't be exactly what we want, but if we take it in steps, we're thinking that we have two teachers, one at a primary, hopefully, and one at intermediate, every elementary school, who are willing to kind of have a new kind of classroom that has new furniture to start. And then we would expect that teaching is different as well. So we have visited and we have researched a bunch of different classrooms and have some ideas on how we would like it to look different. The other area where we could begin to make some changes would be in our LLCs. And those are spaces that, while they may change in a major renovation, we could look at making changes that are basically furniture changes, not structural changes. So no matter where you set your structure up in the future, you'd have a start. So I think we can begin, and I guess that's where I want you to be thinking about this short-term plan, because I'd like to see the classroom look very different. And one small piece of that vision would be, there's not a desk for every child. The room is set up as a lab. Mm-hmm. So there are work areas, there are production areas, there are gathering areas, there are performance areas, and there are places for kids to sit, but they're not all desks.
This is a little bit, sorry, I jumped right over the top of you there, Jess. This is a little different. When we were talking in Master Facilities Plan, we were talking about, you know, breakout space, mm-hmm, and small group space and large group space. things that we can't just accommodate with changes in furniture.
That's correct.
So I guess that's one issue I'm seeing is here we're trying to make this happen with furniture where we don't have the spaces that we talked about being necessary for the 21st century learning environment. The other issue I have is, so we're going to change, you know, a classroom here and there throughout the district, but it's not going to follow a cohort of kids, right? So they're going to go from 21st century learning to 20th century for the next year. You know what I mean?
Possibly.
And then also, anytime there's going to be a big change like that, because you're talking about how we deliver
instruction,
our instruction changes. You know, that's something that I suppose you guys are going to deal with in LLT or whatever. Probably needs to be a more board discussion or at least presentation of what's really going to change.
Well, if in general, in some classes, not much would change. Because we already have teachers who are teaching in a very facilitative way, who have kids moving around the room, doing, you know, they've utilized to the best of their ability their classroom and the structure they have.
Mm-hmm.
You are absolutely right that the bottom line is our facilities can't accommodate all the needs that we have in terms of breakout spaces, for students to have collaboration space, for students to be able to do both independent and small group work, and that is absolutely true. But within the space we have, what can we do to begin to create a learning environment that is less whole class and more collaborative, meeting the needs of individual learners?
Yeah. And I mean, I know we've been, like I said, we've been doing that
mm-hmm.
with our current curriculum and method of instruction. I don't see why they're that and a new facility can't happen concurrently.
They can.
Okay. But
they can. But I'm only saying that in the short term plan, things can start to change that help.
Don't require that.
And but I don't know if.
That, yeah.
Well, yeah, and that's. I mean, I guess that's fine if that's the direction the board wants to go. We can do that with typical capital expenditures and without referenda. The timeline still seems long to me for a new building, and I don't know that we'll be gaining much education of the voting population by putting a couple classrooms in a year at the local level. One of the pluses of a new K-5, even though three quarters or more of the district won't actually step foot in it, is to be a model school, you know, with the type of facility changes we're talking about.
Oh, it also takes pressure off the other schools. So
yeah, it gets rid of the portable. You know,
so those
it's part of a plan at least to get rid of portables, which I think is, on the list of priorities of people who are at least clued into the subject, getting rid of portables is higher than the 21st century learning environment. And you know, there are people who have been involved in Blue Ribbon committees for 6 years that aren't going to have kids. And at some point, they're not going to care anymore. And so you've got to either get a whole new group of people to care, or you're going to get, you know, voted down.
Well, I think that, that's the point that I'm making, Bob, is that you do have to get a brand new group of people that care.
Anyway,
because
yeah.
It's the nature of the beast.
Right.
But does that really take 2 years to do it?
I don't, you know what, I mean.
The reality is, over half of the voters don't care until the last 2 weeks before the election anyway, and then they're like, all right, what's going on? Okay, I got to figure out what I'm going to vote on this referendum.
So the soonest you would see a referendum being viable would be, just if we throw a date out there, then we could kind of back map that a little bit and see what we'd have to get done between that date and today.
I'm a bit biased in that I've been sitting here for 4 years. I don't see why April 2012 would be possible.
Okay, April 2012.
I was going to say November 11.
I mean,
well,
guys,
really, you weren't.
You guys have been working on this for 6, 7, whatever years, and everyone's worried about that date. Yeah, what the heck are we to do?
April 2012. You think that's too late?
No, I just think that
in reality, it's
as long as we've been working on this, we should be able to
we should be able to do
pull
it.
The trigger when we want to, right? But I want to go back to the point I was going to try to make, I think. I feel that what we have to decide on the strategy. In other words, I think the options we're looking at is either build a K through 5 on Spalding, acquire a bigger parcel of land and build a middle school there. And is the option to build a middle school on Spalding still in or out?
Middle school?
Yeah. No, that was never in.
That's
never
out.
Never.
So those are the two options.
Right? Or a new K-5 at large.
It's not even big enough for a K-5 that's the same size as the others.
Okay. Well,
yeah, I guess. Yeah, you could build two.
It's actually big enough for a bigger K-5.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, we could build a 3 or 4 story, whatever, K-5 on Spalding, right?
2 story.
I thought we
went over this now. 2 story K-5 is bigger than all of our other K-5s in square footage.
Let's not debate the location.
No, but I'm saying we have 2 or 3 options, right? Build a K-5 on Spalding. That's option one. That's still on the table. That hasn't been taken off. Correct or incorrect?
But we all agreed it's the least.
But it's an option.
Yes.
Right? Other option is acquire a large parcel of land, which, by the way, if we can't do, then we got to fall back to the other option.
Right.
Right?
That's
so it is an option.
It on the table.
Right. Yeah. So it's not our preferred option, but the other option is to buy a large parcel of land and put a middle school on it and or K through 5. Correct?
Or.
So what I'm saying is, to me, our first step is see if we can go find that large parcel of land. If it exists, and we make that our strategy, and then we say, okay, now we know our strategy. We found this piece of land. We know we can build either a K-5 or a middle school. Now that we know that, and that's our strategy, that's our long-term strategy, then we might say, okay, based on all the plan, in other words, and I'm making this up, but the plan could be build a middle school on a large parcel of land and do this to Ben Franklin, this to Churchill, this to Forest Land, and this to the Hatton, right? We could start to, you might say, you know what, no way, based on the economy, that this a referendum will go through for whatever, X hundreds of thousands of dollars to build this new school. But we could start the Churchill piece because it's the school, let's say, and again, I'm making all this up, it's the school that's has the biggest growing pains, and we decided under our new plan we would do this to the school, so let's go ahead and do that, and maybe it's a, again, making it up, a $5 million referendum to go make that a part of our plan. But it's a part of our plan, and then at some point, if we feel the time is right, and if the enrollment numbers are whatever, and people start to see what we're doing as part of our plan, then we decide when the right time to pull the trigger on that, on the bigger referendum, if there is one, which could be 2012, don't know, but we got to lay our plan out
mm-hmm.
first.
Exactly.
So
that's
we gotta,
what we're doing.
Well, that's the right, the intention of.
So that's why,
proposal,
to me, this, when do we have a referendum is like, let's finalize our plan.
But I think the plan is somewhat dependent, the pace of the plan is very much dependent upon when you think you'd go to referendum, whether it's for $5 million or $60 million. I mean, when you want to do that maps everything we do starting today, and that's why, you know, if you say 2012, April of 2012, and I, you know, it's the board.
I didn't say that. I said that.
Bob said that. But I mean, I'm saying that that's what the board has to somehow reach, and it can be a tentative reach. You could say April 2012, now bring us your action plan or a framework so that we can flesh that out at our next meeting. That's, I mean, we will do that.
If, let's say we find this piece of land. It might take us 2 years to acquire it.
Right, and I think that's the first step we need to do. Before we even talk about the referendum,
right,
let's see if what, you know, because whether you're building on a small parcel or a large parcel of where it is, I think affects a lot of people's interest in what's going
exactly.
on. So I think the urgency here is to find out about the large parcel.
Right.
There's also urgency because this is probably the most favorable time to purchase land,
mm-hmm.
which, you know, you could get the land in place and then have the referendum later.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so we have a process that's been laid out for us. You know, should we need to go through any kind of legal process to acquire land? And we've seen the timeline surrounding that to some degree. So then what you are saying to me is we'd like to get a proposal as soon as possible on land acquisition, on the search.
Yeah.
And the timeline for completing that search, I'm going to guess, should probably take like 6 weeks or something like that. I don't know how long these things take, but perhaps 6 weeks.
Now, this is going back to the folks that you were
Krakauer.
Right. So, I'm assuming that they could give us some sort of indication from a process standpoint how long that's going to take.
Yeah, I wouldn't think it'd take much longer than 6 weeks.
Yeah. To me, as Steve said, until you say that, I don't know what you would think.
Yeah, that's the first thing I want to find out is land, because that really makes it, you know, sense of urgency. And as to the referendum, I mean, yeah, I think if we solve the portable problem, it's there. But, you know, in terms of if it takes a few years, I think the issue's always been portables are not a long-term solution. Because you're not going to argue with any parent now whether portables are, you know, good classrooms or bad classrooms, whether kids like them or don't like them. In the next 4 or 5 years, we're going to have to make a decision whether we replace portables with new portables. And that we're not going to do, period. And that's at the point where you say, look, we have to build a structure, and we need everything in place.
Mm-hmm. And I would also suggest that there's two, like to me, there's two discussions here. I do think that we have a strategy, and it started with the board having this conversation as a whole, shifted as it shifted to finance, it shifted back now, and the strategy is what we're doing in this, progressing in this direction, from ultimately the Finance Committee's report a few months ago. So I think the strategy is, again, for those who are paying attention, they see the long-term, there's a short-term strategy and a long-term strategy, and that there's been consistent conversation around this, at least for the last year and a half, 2 years. But there's a difference between the board making a decision to go out, you know, and purchase, build, renovate, and the board making a decision to do that, and with it a concerted effort to bring community and parents into the table to help do the planning. I mean, my sense is, because Julie, you've talked about this before, you gave us you know, a plan. That was a reality check on how, what's involved in really building a community interest and commitment to this. And I'm not going to call it buy-in because I think that gives it, that doesn't do it justice. It's really a sense of feeling integrated and a part of the conversation. And when you know, the button gets pushed, we get it. We're not going to avoid, to your point, Bob, those, you know, group of people who in the last 2 weeks before the election say, oh, that's right, there's a referendum vote. What do I do? We're still going to have to do the heavy lifting of getting that information. But I remember, Julie, you saying this, and I was actually at a course a couple weeks ago where almost verbatim the professor said this. And it was that once people make a decision about something, regardless of fact, they will stay with that decision, either to the positive or to the negative, depending on your position. And so, you know, when you put it out there in terms of what we're going to do, people are going to make a decision, and then what you're working on is maintaining positive energy and votes, ultimately. So I think one of the differences we could do as a board is to have this be a more, you know, they're more parallel conversation in terms of our strategy and what we're doing. So, I mean, I when you started this whole conversation off and said, here's my thought and here's this 2013-14, I did have a sinking feeling. I do understand that you better than we understand the obstacles to that. There was just an article in the Herald yesterday about Homewood passing their referendum, if people saw it, by an overwhelming 79%. And some of the comments from the community really was about, you know, similar to us, 80% of their community do not have children in the schools. And they are voting, you know, in terms of their tax dollars. And it's about a pride in community,
seeing schools as assets, recognizing the value that's larger than, I don't have a child in school anymore, but I see this, you know, there's a longitudinal factor, so.
Well, it brings value to your home, to school.
Right, it's a community value, you know, so I guess I see that second piece as being a really integrated part of the conversation, and to have to have a communication plan that really begins earlier, more, you know.
Well, and one of the things that you talked about at one point was, when do you engage your community? Do you engage your community around the decision to buy a piece of land and build a school on that piece of land, or use the current land that you have? I mean, that's like one point of decision making.
Well, if there's no land to buy, then
right.
So again, I've got, back to that.
Obviously, that takes that out of the mix.
But you know what, I would suggest that that's a board doing its work. That's our decision based on all the information that we have been culling for 2, 3, 4, 5 years.
It's your decision to make that. It's,
right.
Okay.
That's a board leadership decision.
I wasn't sure.
Based on program needs, you know, demographic, our changing population. This is not, back to that whole Lego thing. It's not taking a Lego building and sticking it on a building. This is a much broader conversation. And we are, this is Erica's opinion, we're charged at this point with stepping up and doing, making a decision that is, you know, long-term for the district, well past any of our kids being here anymore.
Right.
So.
Well, and form follows function. That it is based in our educational plan.
Right. This is not a building. This is looking at Mike Wood's technology plan. I mean, all those pieces, program reviews that we've been listening to for 3 years that have set a course of action that, you know, is in front of us. So.
All right, so now what?
Well, I think you all had a less than enthusiastic response to my suggestion of a timeline, which I respect and I think
it's realistic. I think we could go. I don't think we'd be successful.
Yeah,
I don't know if we keep trying every election then thereafter. It
may be the right timeline. It may not be. I appreciate and feel the same way you do in all respects except practically, that to do it sooner would be much better. I would like to do it much sooner. I don't know that that's realistic. But I think if we, you know, we take the next step, which is to follow in a very aggressive way this land examination and see what's available, see what it would take, see what kind of costs would be incurred in going in that direction. I would say that when we begin that active search and we've made contact with the village and whoever else is recommended to us by Krakauer to, you know, touch base with this person, this group, that we will do that, then I think we need to begin making that a communication that we are actively searching for land so that the community knows that.
I guess if you're looking for a date, because you said when the date for referendum, I'd say a key date for me would be find out if we can buy a piece of land and let's put a date out there.
Like
so
milestones, right?
Mm-hmm. Right. It's just certain benchmarks we have to get along.
Because I usually backward plan instead of forward plan, this probably makes more sense to forward plan by the benchmarks that you want to achieve by certain.
By the end of May, we need to know if there's a piece of land out there for us.
So what were you saying? Are you implying, John, that then the acquisition of the land is a referendum? Or are you saying the whole...
That hasn't been discussed yet.
I don't want to say anything until we know if we have another option besides falling. Because there's no sense to say anything unless we know there's another option.
It's almost like it's, you know, we can't do anything. I mean, we can, per se, but it doesn't make
dealing
sense.
Dealing with hypotheticals.
We're dealing in hypotheticals. So if in the event there's potentially land, you're here and you could go this way or this way. If there's no land, then your discussion becomes something very different.
And even hypothetically, a known piece of land.
Right.
And not just the hypothetical land. Mm-hmm.
And in terms of a timeline or, with benchmarks, I feel it's sort of hard for us to give those until we know
If the proposal's good.
If, you know, that's the homework. I didn't say this, Anne, but I do want to mention, you know, the idea of putting these two classrooms in each school, I think for me is similar to piloting curriculum. Because people are touching it, using it, watching other teachers try it. Those become teacher leaders for them. So there's, you know, I think there's a model in place that's, you know, yeah, that we're already, you know, using on some level. And then I was thinking about District 89 when they did the flip the classroom.
We went and we looked at that as a model.
Yeah.
When they,
and
what, Erica, I didn't hear you, when they...
They, what's it, Leggett? No.
Leggett.
It has this program, architects, that they call Flip the Classroom, and they go in and they use sustainable things like sunlight and lighting and classroom furnishings. You know, they've kind of built a prototype, and then they'll go in and you know, do a particular classroom. So I went over to look at it because I was driving by and let me in. And it was very interesting to see, and the kids seemed to really have adapted and adopted it pretty quickly. But this whole idea of shifting, getting people on board, to your point, Karen, is dead on change, right? Awareness, interest, testing, try, adoption. And unless we build some confidence around these changes for people, they're not going to be motivated to grab onto it. So I get that, and I would be interested in seeing more about that.
And all I'm saying is, as long as that's part of a plan.
Right.
So if the plan is, we find this piece of land, and we're going to build a middle school, but we decide we can't do that till 2020, and we know that here are the changes we would do in the other schools, let's just start.
It's predicated on that big piece.
And that was sort of what I, when I was integrating this whole thing, is that we have to have a way of moving forward no matter what.
Right.
And so
people are,
we have to be able to do what we can do within the parameters.
We are expecting response, right? And I agree.
And I think that's the fear, though, is that, you know, and maybe that's the first thought that came into my mind was, you're talking, you know, potentially 2 years out, then God knows if it passes, if it, you know, it's, you know, this another 6 to 8 year process, and we do nothing in that time, and that's just unacceptable. To do nothing.
And I guess based on what I've heard you say today, I think from our standpoint, what we perhaps can do, and you can react to, is as we build the action plan for the long-range plan around facilities, we'll build our two-year plan about around what we think is doable, and the 3 to 5 year plan around what we think is doable given the current reality that we have. Then as we become more solidified in the plan for the long term, we'll build that. We would reconstruct then the 5 year plan, because obviously it will change dramatically. But in the absence of some of that knowledge, we're going to have to build the plan on, here's what we're going to do in the next 5 years that are going to make our schools look different and are going to make them more amenable to 21st century learning. Mm-hmm. And but to go, I'm sorry, go ahead, John. I won't forget.
It's premature for this, but I would prefer that we err on the side of doing it right in one classroom than doing it half in six classrooms, because that's sort of the scenario of portables, which was, you know, we went down that route, didn't, you know, and now they're here and they grow, right? So you could change furniture and all that, and then it's like, okay, well, let's just do that and the whole school. I mean, I'd rather get one right and have the community see it as what it is than to just do something to just...
Well, that's what I heard Ann say.
I think we would. We
no,
just wouldn't do it all.
At all. What she said is that we would change some furniture. Bob said we had issues with space, so we know we can't make a classroom to be 21st century. I'd say I'd almost like to just, you know, make sure that we spend the money to do it the way we want to do a 21st century, not a stepping stone. Again. That's what I'm saying.
It's not just FFE.
I didn't hear that.
Let's change a space into how we want it, with small group, large group.
Right. I mean, do it right so that people know what they would get and determine if they value that or not. And we'll probably learn something from it, as opposed to just changing furniture in a space that can't accommodate that. And it's premature for that, but I'm just throwing that out.
But let me talk a little bit more, since I only really threw that out as part of the context of the other conversation. It absolutely is more than furniture. We've talked about, and we're meeting with principals this Thursday. The blue packet of information in here that we gave you is a packet on 21st century classrooms, and it's sort of the introduction for our principals on doing some thinking and reading around what classrooms might be that would be a little bit different than what we have currently. But before I talk a little bit more about that, I just want to go back to Bob's question, which was, I have a 21st century classroom this year, and the next year I've got everybody sitting in rows. And, you know, we've been working over the last 5 years to change that paradigm, mm-hmm. that teachers aren't all teaching.
I mean, I've never had any of my kids in rows.
Right, right. Yeah. So I don't think
all in pods.
I think we've moved away from that. I think the kind of one of the shifts that you'll see in 21st century learning is, are we using technology different? Are we creating greater student ownership in the learning and the thinking and the planning? Are we building in those higher order thinkers, thinking skills, greater rigor around project-based learning? And so while with some curricular changes as well as some structural changes, and the teacher is facilitator, a little bit more than teacher as director and sage on the stage. And we have teachers who are already doing that. We want to see all of our teachers move to that level. But so by creating model classrooms, you know, to allow that to continue. So I don't think you would see that a child who's in this classroom this year wouldn't maybe see exactly the same thing the next year, but would see impacts from that as well. But I think what we've talked about one room that we think has the capacity to look more different than any of other classrooms because it's bigger is a classroom at Ben Franklin, where we tried to create, by taking down a wall, we tried to create a literacy model classroom. And so that classroom is already in place at Franklin. We hope that would be a classroom, you know, that we would be using next year as one of the classrooms, and can begin to, you know, build on that space issue a little bit. Can't do that everywhere, but we would want to make it more than furniture. You know, we've talked with FGM about lighting, and we've talked about coverings and natural light, and we've talked about sustainable fabrics, and we've talked, you know. So I do think we'd want to create the classroom as completely as we would want it to look. Now, we might have to put tables out in the hallway in order to create the image of the collaborative spaces that we simply wouldn't have room for. So that you may have to, like, find some other ways to do that. But, and we were also thinking that there isn't just one look to the classroom of the future. Mm-hmm. There may be many looks. Primary will be dramatically different, I would guess, than intermediate. And junior high, you know, would even look more different than that. So we think we need more than one classroom, because we think we need the opportunity to look at how does this work and what do you think about this, and get people in and out of those classrooms to talk and learn from each other around that. We would have high expectations that the teachers who choose to do this will be leaders, will be exemplars both in instruction and in their use of technology, and, you know, be able to really serve as teacher leaders at their schools.
Mm-hmm. Well, we've had a good track record over the last couple of years with teachers popping on pilot. So
we've got some teachers who, you know, even if they were uncomfortable, would, I think, step up to the plate to do this and be willing to take the risks.
Mm-hmm. Let me go ahead, leave Bob there. In the courtyard, they're going back to the Socratic method. Under the tree.
And in the arena.
Like
right.
Can you do that social studies curriculum?
We'll go back to the concept of what is our plan, where are we going, and how are we getting there? And I think we through facilities, I think we constructed kind of, you know, the launching pad. I think it took about a year, and it took a fair amount of work, but I think we've I think we've got the launching pad ready. I think it dovetails nicely into what your work in terms of the short and long term plan, which I'm assuming you'll bring to us, and maybe that'll fill in a number of the gaps. So I think we're heading where we want to be.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Just confused at the, I guess, our surprise at the longer date. Just because, you know, we spent we just spent the year in finance talking about everything and bringing the proposal forward. I guess I was anticipating us moving a lot faster.
And maybe we will. You know, maybe, and you know, the people who work most closely with me know that I usually am not one to, give a long timeline to things. I think we can get things done quickly. So I may be being overly conservative in my thinking around this, and maybe I'm also thinking too big and too complicated. But I felt I had to at least throw that out there, not as a wet blanket, but as something to at least give us time to reflect on and think about. I'll move at any pace you give me.
Mm-hmm. I'm just thinking in terms of the people that were on the master's facility, you know, most recently came back and asked, hey, what are you guys doing? Mm-hmm. You know, they then saw a timeline, you know, that pushed out things a couple, 2, 3, 4, 5 years. Mm-hmm. I think then there might be some community disappointment.
Sure. Well, I think no matter what we do and no matter what the timeline is, we've got to put the plan out there.
I was going
to say, the plan has
to
have those markers. And,
right.
And that's really, I think, the conversation you've had this evening has helped me a little bit, and we'll put together some markers to bring back to you once we learn a little bit more about the land search. But I think no matter what, we absolutely have to communicate. Here's what we're going to do in 2011-12. Here's what we're going to do in 2011-13.
Just a question. Let's deal in hypotheticals some more.
Let's
suppose that the analysis comes back with, yes, there's a large parcel. What's the board going to need to decide between K5 or 6-8 on that large parcel?
Depend on the size of the parcel.
Well, let's suppose you've got a parcel where you could build either one.
Okay.
What is, because that's the next decision that's going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
Not by me.
You know,
but you might be a participant in the.
Yeah, just coming back on master facility, but isn't that maybe part of the conversation about how we start to bring community to the table, parents to the table?
Yeah, I would.
You know,
I would get input if it's really a tough decision, you know, given the size and location, where it could be anything.
Mm-hmm.
I think given those, it may favor one or the other. But yeah, that's when you bring in the community, I think, to help flush it out.
I mean, to me, the answer to that question is whichever one gets us the better education. So.
And serves the most children in the district.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, to the point of the newspaper articles, the one I read also in Home Front on Joliet, where they want to build a new high school, where people say, I'm not voting for a Home Front gets a new high school and the rest of Joliet doesn't.
I mean, it sounds somewhat selfish when you say it, but I think that's really a legitimate feeling for people. And I say that because I think in the last how many years, We've made such strides in the quality and the consistency of the curriculum and the offerings in every one of our buildings. You know, we don't hear at this school they do this, at that school they do that, and we've made these strides to be able to do that and to say no, that isn't the way it is. We don't allow that to be the case. My concern, and you know what I'm hearing anecdotally from people, is you're going right back to that kind of a model, building a building for a small number of kids that is, you know, the 21st century learner, where every classroom has, you know, the stuff. And then you look at all the other buildings and how are we going to, you know, you're never going to get them to there because you can't.
because of the physicality of your building, of your facility. And I think...
So nobody gets it.
Well, I mean, it sounds petty, but that's kind of, you know about it? You get to another ways, but you know about it? As petty as it sounds, I really feel that that's what you hear. I mean, that's, you know...
Or everybody would get it in an elementary that exists already, I guess, is what you're saying, is it how you do your renovations in those elementary. Mm-hmm. Yeah, each school would be different anyway.
I think it's the value of what you get educationally, too. I mean, as to components that you get into that, you know, as to some point, we know our junior high has a lot of unique 21st century learning needs for things you do in a junior high that aren't done in any elementary school.
To prepare them for school.
Well, yeah, performing art areas, you know, just cafeterias, other things like that, that you'd have to say, well, what is the best value? To build new on a greenfield space, or is it to try to renovate something that's already there to try to fit this?
The interesting part of this conversation right now makes me lean towards maybe you need to make this decision and not make a community conversation, because you probably will get
we'll get 1,000 responses.
You know, six of one, half dozen of another.
Yeah.
But it does also make me wonder, do we, you know, if we've said 8+ acres, if you're leaning towards a junior high, or at least, you know, if they come back with 8+ acres or 8 acres as here's a great possibility, that is not a junior high.
I mean, personally, I think that you, while you're saying, you know, we need to make that decision, I think one of the lessons that we learned from, you know, the last referendum is, you know, while I truly believe we sought a great deal of input and we got a lot of input, you know, there's always factions that believe they were not heard or they did not agree, and you're always going to have that.
Or you didn't do what they suggested.
What they suggested. And I think it's sort of a fine line between what are we hearing from our community that they want, and we as a board have a different opinion because we have another perspective, more information, but we've been living this dream forever, it seems. Mm-hmm. So we have a different perspective of it. But in the end, it's not the seven of us who, I mean, the community is the one that has to make that decision.
And own it.
And
be a part of the
plan. Right.
Yeah. I would just caution you to keep in mind that when you're weighing 6-8 versus K-5, that 6-8 is going to be well over 2 times as expensive to put that building up. Because you're building for, 1,100 students instead
mm-hmm.
of 600.
Mm-hmm.
So right off the bat, square footage-wise, it's going to be more than double, because, you know, middle schools require more square foot per student and more specialized look, mm-hmm. you know, labs and all that fun stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So, weigh that.
Yeah, 10 classrooms.
You're talking about a 2-time multiplier that at some point you got to weigh into the equation.
Sure.
If you go to the, I just think if you go to the public and say, you know, we're going to build a new middle school that's going to wipe out, you know, the portables issue, and it'll have all these great bells and whistles educationally. And on the other side of the scale is, well, we could have gotten away with the K-5 and blown all of the portables away, and this costs 2 times this. What were you thinking?
If that's possible.
Give them both options.
But the K-5 doesn't get rid of 10 portables at hand.
Okay.
Well, it would obviously, all of these are not just a new middle school. It's also a new middle school and rehab Hadley, and maybe do something else somewhere else. And a new K-5 isn't going to be just a new K-5.
Right.
It's going to be rehabbing.
Yeah, I'm interested to see what the architects come up with. And
maybe you could do a K-8.
You know, on the flip side, I would say that if we went to the junior high concept, you would have a project that potentially any student within the district in other words, going into the junior high environment would have access to.
Right. Feel an attachment to it.
Right.
Yeah. That they would benefit from.
Right. There'd be benefit for all students in the district at the point at which they enter sixth grade.
Right. Which you don't get.
Yeah, we've talked about
right.
that. Yeah.
You get, I mean, that's obviously a clear advantage. Whether you're going to tell me that that's worth two times, you know, $60, $70 million, I don't know if that's worth it.
Mm-hmm.
If I'm a junkie builder.
Well, it may be that that's part of the community engagement. You know, in as you said, that's why you have to have both the decision making. I think I'm almost leaning towards in this land acquisition that should they be compartmentaling, like looking at here are some things that would work, 8+ acres.
Yeah.
Here are some things that are in the 12 to 18 acres. And I'd say 12 because Hadley is now 11. We know it's too tight, so let's at least add one more acre to it. But, you know, that then you could see what the potential is for both, mm-hmm. as opposed to just that wide range of 8+ acres. Maybe that.
Well, and they might have a particular process that they follow in terms of providing that information. Mm-hmm. So it'd be worth asking the question.
I mean, I suspect it'll be a limited number.
Yeah, I don't think there's a...
I don't think it's going to be like...
It's not going to be a 30-line table.
I tell we need to narrow our criteria.
Motion.
Any other conversations on this topic? On any other topic that's on our agenda or that we need to talk about relative to the master facilities plan and moving forward?
Thanks for this information. You want us to take a look through this?
Take a look. Read it at your leisure. You don't have the same Thursday deadline. We are also reading a chapter in the 21st century learning book that will help facilitate that. And I could either pass that book around to everybody or, you know, six.
Okay. So I need to make a motion to go into closed session.
Mm-hmm. Do we have a reason to go
into closed session? Okay. So at this time, the board has determined a reason to go into closed session for two reasons. First, the appointment, employment, compensation, discipline, performance, or dismissal of specific employees of the district or legal counsel for the district, including hearing testimony on a complaint lodged against an employee or legal counsel for the district to determine its validity, and also litigation when an action against affecting or on behalf of a particular district has been filed or is pending before a court or administrative tribunal, or when the district finds that an action is probable or imminent, in which case the basis for the finding shall be recorded and entered into the closed meeting minutes.
Second. Yep.
Second.
Moved and seconded. All in favor?
Aye.
Okay.
There'll be no action when we come out.
And there'll be no action when we come out.